Hey everybody, welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
I'm back again this week. I'm on a roll here, hailing you from Edmonton again. If anybody is listening from the Edmonton area and you want to connect, just send me an email, info@apologeticscanada.com, and that email will be forwarded to me, and I'd be happy to connect with you. Andy, I heard that stuff has been happening on your end. So what's going on?
Well, the first thing that's going on is somehow I managed to get a cold in summer. So I'm fighting a cold, Steve, and it seems like it's going around. So I've heard from a number of people that have gotten a cold as well. It looks like winter time is no longer the only time you get the cold. Looks like summer is it's making its rounds. So that's unpleasant. But, you know, other than that, our listeners might find it interesting to know that one of the podcasts that we recently did, an interview with Jen Smith, got us into some hot water, if you will, which was interesting because we didn't expect that at all. However, right after we ended the podcast with Jen, he did tell us that he's done other interviews, and in particular an interview on TV, where they ended up not airing it because they were just too worried about the backlash from talking on the subject. And we kind of laughed that off and thought, oh, that's crazy. Well, we're not afraid to publish this. So we just went forward, obviously, and published it. But man, did that incite some people for sure. And one of the things that happened immediately, I was scheduled for some time to speak at a local high school here in British Columbia. It was part of an interfaith dialogue that I had been invited to, which isn't uncommon. We, as pastors, I often get these sorts of requests to participate in an interfaith dialogue. And so I was looking forward to doing so. It was part of a social studies class on human rights and social justice in particular. So there's some irony there. Doing this interview immediately got me uninvited from that high school. Now, it wasn't the high school that uninvited me because of that show, but because some people online – now, this is where things get interesting. One person online began to say all sorts of things against me, calling me a bigot and a number of other things and falsely representing my view and, in fact, didn't even have the decency of spelling my name correctly. So I was Andy Steigler there online. But yeah, so this is the heartbreaking part of it to me. I mean, the real frustrating part of our culture today is that that's all it took. It just took one person going online, ranting, saying stuff about me. And within 15 minutes, I was uninvited from that school. And so I was shocked. I was really quite surprised. And then I didn't read any of these threads because it was part of a closed group on Facebook that this person was misrepresenting me. But, you know, it kind of blew up there online and had a lot of people commenting on it. I heard later that a lot of people came to my support and really challenged this lady, which, you know, not surprising, you know, this dialogue apparently online really turned sour and there was a lot of name calling and stuff from what I gather. And so I think that's ironic as well. You know, I didn't even participate in this at all, but yet I was the one uninvited. And one of the things that we're seeing in our culture today, and this is something that should concern our listeners, is that all it takes today is just to go online and say whatever you want about another individual, you know, publicly shame them as you will. And that's all it takes in the social media courts, you know, if you will, and it's immediately guilty and uninvited. And so I've since learned that I'm not the only one that this is happening to, that there's many others that this is happening. And it's an effective tool for people that want to bar you from speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that there's a lot of fear around just even speaking up. And I think that's what concerns me, is that it's not even so much a matter of who's right, who's wrong. But right now we're asking the question of, can we even talk about this? Clearly, people on the other side of the debate the answer seems to be, in general, a resounding no, we're not going to talk about this. But what we are going to do is pressure you in some political way. I find that pretty disturbing.
Yeah, and social media is proving to be a great weapon to do that, to pressure people into to not speaking. And it's interesting because I've heard from people that will contact us and say, you know, we are so thankful for your podcast because you'll talk about issues that other people are too afraid to talk about. Mm-hmm. But to me, I mean, I find that such a sad commentary of our culture, that's the degree of our, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And that so many people are afraid to speak up because they're afraid that they're going to be bullied online. I found it interesting, too, that I saw an article recently where the Hell's Angels have started using this as their tactic, where they'll take to online and giving people bad reviews and other sorts of things to pressure them into what they want. Because, I mean, in some ways, it's more effective than, you know, showing up with a gun or bullying somebody in that way. It's so effective, this social media bullying, if you will. Now, one of the things, though, that's a positive of this whole thing is it didn't work for them. And if anything, I think it really backfired on the people who did this. And I say that because, one, it's gotten a lot of people talking about this, but two, this class was outraged by this. The students were upset. And I think it's important for people to know, you know, I was vetted by the school and by the class months ago before this happened. So parents had an opportunity to voice their concern, which they didn't. And this wasn't a parent of the class nor of the school that was berating me online. This is just some lady. And so this class was quite upset about that. And they were upset, you know, they had listened to a Sikh, they had listened to a Muslim, they had listened to a Mormon. And now it was the Christian that was coming up to speak, and this is the one who gets uninvited, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And so the class was really upset about that, that that's all it took to get somebody uninvited from their class whom they were looking forward to hearing speak on that subject. And so that class actually took action and said, no, we still want to hear from you. And so they actually met with me outside of school time, and I still had an opportunity to present to that class, and I did. And we had a wonderful discussion. And if anything, it emboldened those students and challenged them, both the Christians in that class and non-Christians alike. You know, they got a front row seat to what social justice looks like, and they'll never forget that.
Yeah. And I think the important part too is that it's when you say social justice, I immediately see scare quotes around it, right? Because the kind of social justice we're talking about, in my opinion, isn't really centered around social justice per se, but it is almost like a political affiliation. Rather than fighting for LGBTQ community, they're busier fighting against people that just have different opinions. You know what I mean? So I don't see that as social justice. I see it more as just a bullying tactic.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, if I could just recommend something to our listeners that would like more on this, maybe you've been bullied online or shamed. And I think it's important that just people understand this topic more. There's a great book that's been written on this subject called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. It's by John Ronson. And he also has a TED Talk that he gives where he speaks on this. It is an excellent TED Talk. You know, he's speaking out against this, and he's taking a lot of abuse for doing so. And now he's being socially, you know, bullied as well online. But this is something that that we've really got to talk about. And one of the things he talks about is how when we see this sort of thing happening online, that we can't just pass by, and that we need to say something, that we need to stick up for those people who are just being publicly shamed in its different fashions.
Yeah. We'll be sure to post that TED Talk on our Facebook page. So keep your eyes peeled for that, listeners, if you're listening to this. So let's then jump into today's topic. I don't know about you, Andy, but my Facebook feed has been almost entirely covered with the immigration issue on the southern borders of the United States, where families are being separated, especially kids being separated from their parents, And so obviously a lot of people are outraged. So I did some digging around to see what is actually happening, where this came from, so on and so forth. The best sense that I could make is that back in 1997, there was this piece of legislation called Flores Consent Decree that said that unaccompanied children can be held only for up to 20 days. And then what happened after that is there was this Ninth Circuit ruling that extended this 20-day limit to children that actually come as part of a family unit. So the idea is that if your parents are arrested for something illegal at the border, then the children can't be jailed along with them, because the children really haven't done anything wrong. They're just following the parents. And so then what would happen is ICE would take the illegal migrant parents, and then the children would be taken over by HHS, Health and Human Services. And so while things are being figured out, the children would be either put up with a foster family or more ideally with a relative that is already in the country, so on and so forth. So, by the way, the Ninth Circuit is known for being pretty liberal. And so there's a lot of like finger pointing going on back and forth. And I've just found this really kind of heartbreaking, because there are children that are being separated from the parents. And yet what I see in the political sphere is just a lot of blaming game that's going on back and forth. With that, like, what were your thoughts as you looked at these issues?
I'm with you, Steve. You know, this is a heart-wrenching issue where you've got kids being separated from parents, and it makes you think, you know, back to different wars that have taken place and how these sorts of atrocities have happened. As I was just digging into this subject, though, and looking into it, one of the things that I always like to do, you know, is to take a bigger picture of what's taking place. And right. One of the things that we see is, with regard to finger-pointing, you know, this isn't just something that the U.S. deals with, but it's well known that this is an issue that Canada deals with as well, with regards to immigration and those seeking specifically asylum, is what do you do with these children? You know, this is an issue that Canada faces, and this is something that Canada does as well. There's times where they have to separate children also. So first, I think that's important to understand. This isn't just happening in the U.S. The other thing is, one of the things that I'm seeing that's a significant issue here is that the United States and Canada, and of course countries throughout Europe, are dealing with immigration issues. We're dealing with mass amounts of people that are seeking asylum and are seeking refugee status, creating all sorts of challenges for these countries with how do you facilitate that and how do you help these people in a way that's both healthy for them and for the country they're seeking to come to. Now, one of the things that we're seeing is that that's a difficult process to do legally, and so a lot of people will opt to do so illegally. And in the past, what we've seen is that immigration or asylum seekers or those that are just hopping across the border tended to be single males. You know, I grew up in the United States, and I was used to meeting men from Mexico that had come across the border and were working and sending money home sorts of things, or had become citizens. I actually had a good friend of mine who had come to the United States in a trunk. We used to laugh about it. He hid in the trunk of a car and got across. And now, you know, he's legal now. You know, that was actually pretty common. But now, one of the things that began to take place is women and then children and then whole families began to come, and they started realizing that they had greater success if they brought children with them, and that children then became this leveraging tool, so much so that at times, you know, immigration isn't even sure if those kids actually belong to those people.
Right. There are some smugglers that would traffic children basically into the country.
Yeah, we've even heard cases where they'll rent children out to help you to get across the border. And so, as you can imagine, you know, this is creating some serious challenges for countries on how they're going to deal with these cases. Now, Steve, as you know, when family units come and children do get separated, the goal of the state is to process those cases as quickly as possible.
Right.
So that you know, they can get those families back together, and so that they can be on their way often, which is sending them back. You know, in my research, this is where things get really interesting. It's illegal to just come into the country. It's a misdemeanor.
The first time you do it, it's a misdemeanor, right? And the second time you do it, it's considered felony.
Right. And so if I were to be honest, Steve, as I'm watching all this take place online, I think President Trump and his administration, I think that they're getting exactly what they want. And I think what they want is publicity. When Trump first came into power, there wasn't a lot of immigration or illegal immigration that was taking place because there's a lot of fear over the U.S. being, you know, cracking down on immigration. Mm-hmm. And then word got out that, you know, that it was actually still fairly easy to immigrate. And so it ramped back up again in the numbers. And so part of me just sees this and goes, well, this is just one of the ways. I would say two things. Well, one is this is one of the ways for the U.S. to bring more publicity to this light and to show, no, they are cracking down and you should be weary about crossing the border.
Yeah, as I was looking into this issue, I just found it really fascinating. Like, I mean, I just really felt for the agents at the border, right? So they have this really tough job of trying to figure out whether these asylum seekers are really seeking asylum, right? So they have to take a lot of things into account. Like, now, I don't care whether these agents were working under Barack Obama or Donald Trump. They have a tough job. They have to figure out whether they're telling the truth, these asylum seekers are telling the truth or not.
Steve, why don't you just share, you know, what I think it's important just to define what an asylum seeker is, because I think a lot of people don't understand this aspect of immigration.
Right.
It's the unique aspect of immigration.
Basically, if your life is threatened in your home country, then you can flee to another country and apply for the asylum status. So basically, you're fleeing to a safer country to preserve the life, your life and the life of your family. And so in the United States, as with anywhere else, really, when you come to the border, you have to go to the port of entry. You can't just hop over the border between ports of entry. You actually have to go to like a border station and be properly processed. So what's happening apparently is that a lot of migrants are just hopping over the border without going to the border stations. Now, if you do and you ask for asylum, then this process begins, right? And you're not arrested. You're only arrested if you hop over the border between ports of entry. Now, if you go to a port of entry and ask for asylum, they will take you in and they will process this now. They have to figure out whether you're telling the truth or not. So the problem is this process takes a long time. So often it takes longer than 20 days. So remember the Flores consent decree where you can only hold the child for 20 days and no more. So then as this process takes longer, now the border agents, they have a choice to make. They either separate the families and let the child go to HHS, where they will put the child up with a foster family or a relative, so on and so forth, or they will let the whole family go, which causes another problem because they'll say, okay, this is taking longer than 20 days, so enter into the country for now, come back for a hearing, which they hardly ever do. And so then you have just let people through without properly processing them. And so then people that are outside of the country, then they get the wrong idea that if they just bring family, they can easily enter into the country. So then what I think what the Trump administration is trying to do is actually enforce the law. I'm not saying this is a good law. This is actually really broken kind of a policy. So then he clamps down and he goes for that zero tolerance policy, and we're seeing children getting taken away from the parents and so on and so forth. But
that's really the unfortunate part of this is that the children have become the leveraging tactic in all of this.
Mm-hmm. And we rightly are furious when we see, for example, child soldiers, right? Because there's something about children that we have come to recognize that they're really innocent. They're still trying to figure out the world, and they have the right to do so within the safety the protection of the guardians, whether they be parents or foster parents. Or what I find interesting is that this whole issue, when it started blowing up, it was that one photograph of this one little kid, can't be any older than maybe 6 years old, 5 years old. I don't know how old she is, but she's from apparently Honduras, and she's about to be separated from her parents, and she's crying, and somebody took a picture of that. And people started getting really outraged when they saw this picture, because now they're empathizing with her, right?
It's amazing the power of a photograph, isn't it?
Right.
I think it's interesting, and people might like to know, if you're wondering the numbers on this, from April 19 to May 31st, 1,995 children have been separated from their parents. So it's taking place currently at a rate of about 48 kids a day.
That's a lot of kids per day that's being separated.
Now, it is important to note that often they will seek to first try to find family to send the child to.
Right.
Now, one of the things, Steve, that came out in this that I thought was interesting is one of the things the U.S. said in pushing back on these asylum seekers is that these people should seek asylum in the first safe country that they reach. So if you have somebody from Honduras, for example, their argument would be, well, you should seek asylum in Mexico. You should seek asylum in the first safe place that you reach. But, you know, and so part of that pushback or frustration is that these people are coming to the United States. And so then again, they're arguing, no, this is more than just about asylum.
Again, this is not just a problem for the U.S. Canada is facing the same problem. And so I've heard some members of parliament saying, you know, refugees are welcome to come to Canada, but we have a problem when these refugees are coming up to Canada through the United States, because United States is a safe country for these people. So why are they coming to us, right? And so again, all that to say, regardless of the merit of this argument, it is still the case that this is not just something that's unique to the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's important to understand that this is a challenge that many countries are facing, and that doesn't have simple, you know, simple solutions. Mm-hmm. One thing, though, that I was going to say, I was just going to add that is one of the tactics. I said that there were two, and the second one is that it's been stated that part of this is just leverage for Trump to and his administration to potentially force or to get more of his demands with regards to, say, building a wall or getting that, you know, a wall, right, a border wall financed, for example.
And on top of that, in the midst of all of this, I was just really disappointed at the media. I mean, the political establishment too, but the media, they are just not letting up, and they shouldn't. Everybody should be outraged at the fact that children are being separated from their families, their parents. But where was this outrage during the Obama administration? Because the very same thing was happening back then, but it was nearly silent. And there were some right-wing groups that were reporting on this. But for the most part, the left-leaning mainstream media has been very silent on this. But now that Trump is in power and all of a sudden, right, this thing blows up, and what this does, unfortunately, now everybody has to dig in their heels, right? So it creates more incentives for either party not to do anything. And so what I'm seeing is the senator from California introduces Keep the Families Together Act. All the Democrats are for it. None of the Republicans are for it. And then the senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, introduces an emergency bill. And of course, Republicans are for it, but the Democrats aren't supporting this bill. And then Chuck Schumer from New York, he is saying, well, we don't want to support this because, you know, Trump can fix this with a quick kind of like an executive order. So why should we do this? And then the White House is telling, no, this is your mess. You need to fix this. So there's a lot of finger pointing going on, and the sort of this biased media coverage is not helping anything. And in the meantime, there are, 48 kids per day being separated from their parents. And so This is just really absolutely heartbreaking to see this tragedy that is exacerbated by this political infighting in the country.
And it really goes to show, doesn't it, Steve, just how divided we've become in both the United States and Canada. It's just staggering how divided we've become. And one of the things that I find so fascinating about this divide is how this divide is just exacerbated by the media and social media. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this going both ways. It is so easy to find yourself in an echo chamber, you know, for either position, so much so that you have to really work hard to get out of that echo chamber.
Mm. I think it's partly because of the algorithm that's set up so that whatever you're interested in, you get to see more of. I think that's definitely a part of the problem. But another part of the problem is that it is uncomfortable to read things that are contrary to your views. It actually takes a lot of discipline and character to be able to do that. And I think many of us are not prepared for that. I think we need to definitely be very intentional about hearing the other side.
That's the challenge of being human, isn't it? You know, because you hear what you want to hear that demonizes the other side. And then that's as far as you're going to investigate that. Because, you know, that scratched your itch. Now, it's interesting that Attorney General Jeff Sessions, in an interview, references Romans chapter 13, or not an interview, but a briefing. I don't know if you watched The Late Show, Steve, but Colbert brought this up. Did you?
I actually haven't had a chance to watch it, but I heard a lot of good reviews on it. Tell us more.
I would say that there's good reviews and bad. Okay, first of all, for those who don't know what Romans chapter 13 says, it says, I have my Bible here, verse 1, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. And so you've got Jeff Sessions, he's saying this, you know, that you should respect your government and obey its laws. So now Colbert retorts by saying, yes, but did you read verse 10, which says, love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. And so, you know, he kind of, you know, he pushes back on, well, what are we doing with these kids, obviously, and that it's important to love and care for these human beings. And so he's absolutely right. But when you watch Jeff Sessions' briefing and what he's saying, it seems pretty clear to me that he's quoting Romans 13, not to the American people that, you know, should follow their government, you know, in whatever they do.
Right.
It really seemed to me that he was quoting that to those people that were willing to illegally cross the border, that they should respect the laws of the government and should follow them. Now, I might be wrong there, but that seemed to be the context to me. And so it's again one of those things where it's so easy to rip something out of context to make it fit whatever you want. And so it's interesting, maybe just to mention to, you know, listeners, when the Bible talks about following the laws of the government, it's true, you know, we should respect our government and follow the law to the degree in which they represent the law of God. When something goes against God's moral law, Christians no longer have an obligation to follow those. And in fact, you know, society would actually say you have an obligation not to follow those immoral laws. Now, we've brought this up before, such as the Nuremberg trials, where the Nazis were following German laws in what they were doing, but yet they were held accountable for doing so because they should have known better.
Today, multiple times on social media, I saw this meme that's been going around, you know, citing the apartheid, the Holocaust, so on and so forth, you know, slavery. These were all legal. And it says legality is a matter of power, not justice. I only partially agree with that because I understand what they're trying to say. They're saying just because something is legal doesn't mean it's just. And I agree with that fully. I just find it ironic that the very same people that will say that are also the ones that will use legality as a way of defending their own positions. So I guess I'm saying is in all of this, I'm just seeing, for the most part, like we all agree that for one, children shouldn't be separated from their families for no good reason. And secondly, that yes, people should respect the law of the land. And three, I think people would generally agree that just because something is legal doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do. There is a higher law that we need to obey. In fact, we're all very familiar of cases when in this day and age, when we think of moral heroes, they're precisely the ones that stood up to the law that was evil.
But notice, this is a key distinction, but notice that they used the law to fight against unjust laws. And I think that's an important point to understand, that this isn't a call for anarchy.
No, absolutely not.
I have family that are or were refugees, that were asylum seekers, with being a part of the Mennonite church and Mennonite community, as you have been as well, Steve. Mm-hmm. That's their tradition. But in that tradition, they sought asylum and protection. They did so legally, and they continue to do so legally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important thing, that when people are respecting laws and are seeking to work within those, that it is possible to do so. Mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges that we're facing, though, currently, is that there is so much brokenness around the world, and there is so many people that are seeking shelter, that countries such as the United States, Canada, we just don't even know what to do with all these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, time has quickly gotten away on us on that one. I guess as we wrap up, I just want to encourage our listeners, especially if you're a Christian listening to this. I'm sure, like anybody else, you have lots of opinions on lots of different issues. I guess in a day and age where people seem more and more polarized with each passing week, I just really want to encourage us to be extra careful not to demonize the people on the other side of the debate, and approach a discussion and approach the people in a discussion with grace and charity. And as we do that, hopefully we'll be able to produce more light than heat. So that is my hope. That is my desire. I hope this episode was helpful to you in some way. And as of the date of this recording, we're hearing that Donald Trump will be signing an executive order to try to keep the families together. And so by the time you listen to this podcast episode, more information will have been released probably. So we'll keep our eyes open and see what happens there. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you next week with more stuff to think about. Until then, ciao.